You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Computer scientists are always searching for ways to make computers faster, smaller, stronger. So it's no surprise that the search has led to the smallest and spookiest world of subatomic particles, quantum physics. It's a place where, according to the laws of that land, just about anything can happen. Subatomic particles can appear and disappear out of nowhere. They can be in two places at the same time. They can tunnel through walls. And in this wild west of particle physics, researchers are seeking to tame some of the inhabitants. Because if they corral the special talents of the ultra-tiny particles, they might create something special, an ultra-powerful quantum computer. Writing in this week's Science magazine, scientists show that they have made concrete progress toward creating a quantum computer by controlling the entanglement of just three atoms. Can you make a computer out of three atoms? Well, here to talk about it is Raymond Laflamme, who is the director of the Quantum Information Processing Program at the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research. He's also the director of the Institute for Quantum Computing at the University of Waterloo in Ontario. He joins us there by phone. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Laflamme.
Good afternoon.
This is very interesting. Give us an overall picture of what quantum computing is before we talk about what you've done.
So quantum computing is the idea of using a different set of rules or laws of nature to compute. So the usual laws that we have around us, the laws which are called the classical laws of physics, the one that we have inherited from Newton and Maxwell, tells us how to control kind of the macroscopic world, the big things stable around us. But when we go to very small things like atoms, then suddenly things start to behave differently. As you mentioned before, things can be at two places at the same time. So the idea of quantum mechanics or quantum computing is to harness these new rules to compute a different way. Mm-hmm. At first sight, you might think, oh, things can be at two places at the same time. That will be very hard to control the system and make this something new. Turns out if we can harness those laws, we can make things, and computers in particular, much, much more powerful. Hmm. And so that is the idea of quantum computing.
And there's also this concept called entanglement in quantum computing and in the quantum world. That's really a pretty spooky idea.
Yeah, it is very spooky. And to really understand entanglement, in fact, even physicists today don't fully understand exactly what entanglement is. We know what it is for a few particles, but when there's more than two, then we kind of cannot quantify it as well. And it's really a generalization of idea of correlations. So what are correlations? Suppose that I give you a set of balls, which are either numbered zeros or one. I'll take two of them. I'll put them in a box without telling them if I've put the zero or the one. You have no idea what you're going to get out of the box. Mm-hmm. But if I pick one out and I tell you it's a zero, then you'll know exactly what the second one is because I told you that they were correlated to start with, that I've put a pair of either zero and one. So that's the idea of correlation and classical correlation, relationship between different objects. When we arrive at the quantum world, then there's a new type of correlation, something which is more powerful, and this is what entanglement is. It is a property of a set of objects together which have correlation which are more powerful than we are, kind of stronger than the classical world tells us.
Mm-hmm. And so take that analogy again with the balls in the box. How would that work in entanglement?
So if I take these balls in the box in the classical world, and then instead of having a single box, I've put each of my balls, like the two zeros or the two ones, in two different boxes, and I split them apart. I keep one in Washington where you are.
Right.
I put the other one in Waterloo. Once you open the box at your side, then it's not going to affect the result that I have here. With the quantum state or quantum entanglement state, if you decide to measure something slightly different, you'll have some effect in Waterloo. So there's some kind of weird transmission of relationship between these objects. You have to remember one thing, is that in quantum mechanics, balls don't have to be either in the state zero or one. They can be in a superposition of both of them, 0 plus 1 and 0 minus 1. So when you go and measure them, if you measure 0 or 1, or 0 plus 1 and 0 minus 1, you're going to affect what you see at some other place.
Right. The whole idea that the observer affects the experiment or the outcome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the first person who discovered this was Schrödinger in the 1930s. And he named this thing, or he wanted to kind of bring it to people. So he thought about this with a cat, of trying to have a cat which would be in two possible states at the same time, being dead and alive. And everybody was really surprised that quantum mechanics could allow that kind of thing. One person was really against death and really thought it was a bad idea was Einstein.
Yeah.
He wanted to really show that this was complete nonsense. In fact, he had something called the Einstein-Podolsky or EPR paradox to try to say that this was complete nonsense. And at that level of discussion between Einstein and Schrödinger, in fact, it was a little bit of a shouting match between scientists of trying to say who's the right person or who has the right idea in there. But it was really a philosophical debate. And the philosophical debate turned into an equation in 1963 because of the physicist called John Bell. What he showed was those correlations can be taken advantage of. And he showed that if the classical correlation are the right ones, the classical world or the classical rules are the correct one, a certain quantity had to be smaller than 2. If the quantum world is the correct description of the world around us, it could be greater than 2. And so as a measurement, in fact, of polarization of photons. And in 1983, Alain Aspect in Paris made the experiments that was proposed by John Bell and shows that quantum mechanics was the right theory to describe the world around us.
Wow. And so how does this tie into this paper that's published in Science about, now that we know about quantum mechanics, how do they make a computer knowing it, and what did they do?
So what the people at Boulder, the group of Dave Warland at Boulder, and the group of Rainer Blatt in Innsbruck have been doing is that they really extended the work of this guy called Aspect in Paris. Aspect, what he did was with photons and created this state with entanglement and measured them. There was only 2 photons or 2 particles in there. The people in Boulder in Innsbruck, what they did is, instead of using photons, they use atoms. Mm-hmm. And they have 3 of them. And there's a couple of reasons why it's really interesting. First, they show that, indeed, they can control a bigger system going from 2 to 3, going from photons to atoms. But also, they have complete control of the system. The photons, once they were created, you could not disentangle or re-entangle them. But the atoms at Boulder and Innsbruck, you can completely manipulate these systems. And so once you can control the system, then you can think about doing neat things for technology. And this is really interesting because these philosophical problems that Einstein and Schrödinger were fighting against each other, today is turning into technology that we can kind of take advantage of.
Hmm. So you can entangle the 3 atoms and disentangle them?
Exactly.
Like you could not do to the photon or the other subatomic particles.
Exactly.
So now you can make switches out of them like a computer might use for ones and zeros?
Exactly. And the example of the work at Boulder, what they did is they wanted to use atoms like clock, like the best clock that we have around us today are made of atoms of cesium.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take atoms and you do not entangle them and use them as clock, and you know when you try to kind of do this in a physical system, there's always noise around. So what you could show is that the noise decreases the larger the amount, or the relative noise decreases the larger the amount of atoms that we have around.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we know how much it decreases. It goes like the square root of n, where n is the number of atoms. So for 3, it goes like 1 over the square root of 3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you entangle system, I mentioned earlier that this is a global property. It makes the whole system behave together. It doesn't really distinguish atoms anymore. So they behave like one system. And if you go and work out the math, the noise in the system doesn't go down like 1 over square root of n anymore, but 1 over n. So you have a square root which increases. So for the small system of only 3 atoms, instead of being divided by 1 over square root of 3, which is 1 divided over 1.5, is now 1 divided by 3. So we can make much better clock, much precision. So if we keep on entangling the system, you get better and better clocks.
And does that make for a more powerful computer?
Yeah. So the idea of computer is slightly different, but again, it's a demonstration of the control of the system, which these guys have done, showing that it's really a building block. So the idea of computer is the following one. I can make a superposition of these zeros and one in this atom. In the atom, the zero is the atom being in its ground state, the lowest energy possible. The one is the next highest excited state. So the zero and the one are in there. In a quantum computer, you can make superposition of 0 and 1. So it can be 0 plus 1 or 0 and 1 at the same time. If we have 2 atoms, then we can be in 0, 0, the 2 atoms in the ground state, 0, 1, 1, 0, or 1, 1 at the same time. So we have 4 states. If we have 3 of them, we'll have 0, 0, 0, up down to 111. If you count the number of states, we have 8, which is 2 to the power 3. Mm-hmm. If we have n atoms, it goes like 2 to the n. Mm-hmm. So let's think that we have a quantum computer with only 20 atoms, 2 to the power 20. If you want to do the same calculation on a classical computer, you would need a memory of the order of 2 to the 20, which is about 1 megabyte.
Right.
So this, we have computers like this today. But don't forget that it's only 20 of those quantum bits, 20 atoms. If we have 50 of them, it corresponds to 1 million gigabyte, which is impossible, in fact, unimaginable today to have computers of that power. So if we can make a quantum computer with 50 of those quantum atoms together,
wow,
then it's incredibly powerful.
Wow. All you need is 50 quantum atoms hooked together to get...
things that we cannot do on the powerful computers that we have around us.
Wow, that's shocking.
It is. That's why we're excited.
How close? I mean, is it practical, or are these just laboratory experiments, or are we getting close to actually making a useful device?
Okay, today these are laboratory devices. So we are not, as you know from the article appearing in Science Tomorrow, we have only 3.
Right.
So 2 to the power 3 is 8. We have a classical computer who can do similar things. But it really shows that today we have the technology to control these small systems. And the big question that we have in our field is, can we scale up? And think about this in a broader context. Every time human beings have been able to control new forces of nature, technological revolution have followed. Think about when humans have been able to control fire. Then people gathered together, they were able to make tools, and then that led to agriculture, and then society changed because people could gather a lot more together. Think about steam. Controlling steam led to the Industrial Revolution and trains. Mm-hmm. Kind of steam, right? Think about electromagnetic wave, which were discovered at the end of the 19th century. That led to the telecommunication revolution that we have around today. Every time when humans can tame a new force of nature, then technology ensues and kind of with completely new things that we had never thought about before. And today we are just at the boundary of the quantum world. We don't understand it completely. We don't understand exactly how to make a big quantum computer. But we know we have made the first step, the building blocks, and kind of showed that to the computer scientists who have came with these ideas 10, 15 years ago that the physics experiments are there today. And then we're kind of on a road of building better and better devices.
And so this could conceivably happen within the next decade then.
In the next decade, the next 20 years, it's very hard to know.
Yeah.
Like predicting technology is one of those
things
that even people with crystal balls can say. There's this beautiful quote from Popular Mechanics, 1949. They were talking about a computer called the ENIAC, one of the first electronic computer. And that was Popular Mechanics. So they had the right to be a little bit more optimistic than other people, than kind of a scientific paper. So they were saying the ENIAC weighed 30 tons, and has 15,000 vacuum tubes. Could we imagine in the future having a computer which would weigh only a ton and have 1,000 vacuum tubes?
Right, so I'm thinking about quantum computing, and we'll laugh about microchips this way 20 years from now. On Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Ramon LaFlamme, who is director of the Institute for Quantum Computing, University of Waterloo in Ontario. Let's see if we got a call or two in before we have to change gears again. Renee in Miami. Hi, Renee.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes.
I'd like to, first of all, congratulate Dr. Ramon, because we have so many people who criticize scientists because of their ideals, and they don't realize that these are the men who are giving the face to our beautiful human race. Anyways, my question is, have you, during your research of what you're working with your quantum computers, it's kind of an off-the-wall question, but has it opened up your foresight to finding new types of energy forms? You know, I mean, being that we have all of these crises right now with the country and whatnot, has your foresight been opened up by the work that you're doing right now?
In fact, it has a bit. And then part of the reason why people have been thinking about quantum computers is related to the problem of energy in classical computers. Like, if you put your classical computer on, you'll see that it's going to heat up. And as we shrink the size of transistors and go to smaller and smaller system, and if you're doing the same computation, you'll have to have more and more powerful fans to kind of clear up the heat that we have around. And this is one of the problems that has been dodging the computer industry, that they know it's coming and they don't know exactly what to do with it. So one, and this happens because the way we compute in the classical world, it's irreversible, and that leads to heat extraction, that we need to extract heat in the system. If we think about system where we could compute without extracting heat, and think about what are the laws of physics which would allow this, quantum mechanics is one of them. So we would be able to compute without really kind of spending energy to kind of make the computation itself. And that was one of the kind of sources or kind of one of the motivation initially to think about quantum computers, or that's how people thought about them.
The fact that they've got these three entangled atoms now, has the problem now been reduced, and I use that word advisedly, reduced to an engineering problem of scaling this up?
There are people who would like that to be true. Although we should think that we know only a very small part of the quantum world. Like, we're really, it's there next to us, and we have our big toes dipping in that sea of the quantum world. But maybe when we arrive to 10, 20, or 30, maybe quantum mechanics is not the right theory. Maybe something is going to happen, or maybe we'll not be smart enough to control the system. I don't know, and that's the challenge that we have to face. But it is there, and right now seems that the world behaves like the quantum mechanics predicts.
Quick call to David in Amherst. Hi, David, quickly.
Yes, I was wondering, earlier you mentioned how if two particles are entangled, and you have one in Washington and one somewhere else, and you modify one, the other one modifies as well. Is that right?
Yes.
Can you do that with the atoms you have right now?
Yes, people can do that with the atom right now.
Now, is that for communication?
Aha, very good question. It turns out that we cannot communicate. There's some kind of relationship between the system, but we cannot send a message. Now, you might say, oh, this is not that interesting, but these computer scientists are incredibly smart. What they have thought of is to use this new correlation to be some kind of catalyst for communication protocol. And it turns out that you can improve certain kind of communication protocol, like scheduling problem. With a little bit of entanglement, you might be able to do those problems much faster than the way we are doing them in the world today.
And you can't communicate because this entanglement occurs instantaneously, and communicating would mean you're traveling faster than the speed of light, right?
In fact, you cannot communicate because the laws of quantum mechanics tells you that once you kind of decide to change your basis somewhere, the way you, the chance on the other side of measuring a zero and one is equal.
I got you. We've run out of time, Dr. Laflamme. Thank you very much again for coming on and tackling this tough subject for us.
You're welcome.
Raymond Laflamme is Director of Quantum Information Processing at the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research. Also, he is Director of the Institute for Quantum Computing, University of Waterloo in Ontario. We're going to take a short break and switch gears again. Come back and talk about the transit of Venus. Stay with us.